ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Graham Hart Show. Me, Breiser, here on Cornwall Revolution Radio and out of grism.blogspot.com, where Mammy welcomes you to the best news aggregate site on the World Wide Web. It's good to have your company, folks. If you'd like to join us in the chat room, click on the HTML5 chat link on the top right-hand side of the page, just below the player of your choice. I'd also like to welcome listeners of Your Folk Radio. Good to have you all on board also, folks. I'd also like to make it clear to all listening that I reserve all rights to my words, as do my guests. So, welcome, folks. It's Monday, October 7th, 2019, allegedly. Hope you've all had a good week. Our guests tonight are John Friend and Georgia Peach. Now, unfortunately, it's not live, folks. Neither of them could make it live tonight. So we had to do a pre-recorded show on Saturday. So it's a two-hour show. John is on for the first hour, and Georgia joins in as also for this, for the second part of the first hour, and then we've got Georgia on her own then for the second hour. So it's a good show, folks. I hope you enjoy it. So sit back and relax, and we'll see you in the chat room. We'll take a break after an hour, and then we'll come back to it again. So see you later. Listen, have a good listen. See you soon.
John, welcome to the show, man. Good to have you back again.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. It's always nice speaking with you. It's been a while. Mm-hmm. So thanks for having me back on.
You sent me some articles, John, which you wanted to cover, stuff you've been putting out there. One which, of course, is very interesting. Actually, I tell you, I did hear about it, and where I heard about it was on Dennis Fetchell's show, but you're the only other person I've seen talking about it. It's about this Malaysian prime minister who's been making some statements, which it's quite heartening to see. So, John, tell
yeah.
us.
Exactly. The Malaysian Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad. He's been a long time politician in Malaysia. He was the Prime Minister for years, and then I believe he was out of office for a period of time. Now he's back in office as the Prime Minister, and he's been involved, for decades in the country's politics, and has been a major leader in the region. And he's been very critical of Jews, the organized Jewish community, Jewish control of Western society, essentially, their power and influence in the Western world. He has been critical and skeptical of the official Holocaust narrative, which, of course, the organized Jewish community is particularly outraged about. Right? I mean, they certainly don't want anybody, certainly at that high of a level of politics, to question anything that they say, especially their sacred 6 million narrative. Yeah. But for years he's kind of he's been sort of a renegade and been unafraid and unapologetic. In saying some of these things and speaking openly about, the reality of Jewish power and influence in the world. And he was recently invited to speak at this very prestigious forum, the Global Leaders Forum at Columbia University, which, of course, is one of the United States' top, universities in the whole country. And, leading up to it, I was kind of following it, leading up to his speech, which took place about 2 weeks ago, I want to say, at this point. And, the organized Jewish community groups like the ADL, the World Jewish Congress, major established Jewish organizations, they had been saying that, they were going to boycott Columbia University. They were encouraging the administration to disinvite him and to shut down this guy's speech and, basically kick him out of the university. But Columbia University, to their credit, allowed him to come and address this Global Leaders Forum. And, you can watch the entire speech. It was like about an hour long. And it, of course, had nothing to do with Jews. It had nothing to do with his views on the alleged Holocaust or anything like that. It was basically focusing on the politics of Malaysia and, the politics in Southeast Asia more generally. And I did watch the entire speech. It was pretty interesting. I mean, I'm certainly no, expert in, in Asian affairs or Malaysian politics or anything like that. But it was pretty interesting. But needless to say, some obnoxious Jewish student at Columbia University, this young lady, got up and during the Q&A asked him about his views on the Holocaust and about, some of the previous statements he's made. And his response was really epic. It was, an excellent response. He basically said that if you can't question the Holocaust, if you can't say, quote unquote, anti-Semitic statements, make anti-Semitic statements, then you really have no free speech. And that's exactly right. I mean, these are the concept of free speech, certainly from an American perspective, is all about protecting an individual's ability to say, to question power, to question authority. And, you know, this is like one of the most taboo topics in the entire world, certainly in America, certainly in the Western world, is, you know, questioning Jewish power and influence, thinking critically about Jewish power and influence and how it's wielded in our world. And of course, you know, questioning and doing honest, serious research into World War II, especially the alleged Jewish Holocaust narrative. These are things that we're simply not allowed to do, and it shows you the limits of, you know, free speech in our society. You know, over in Europe, it's literally against the law, you know, to question or dispute the official Holocaust narrative, at least in many, many countries, including in France, including in Germany, and many other European countries, where there's people, you know, people that we know. I know you recently interviewed Monica Schaefer, who is a, you know, a good friend, and she's been on my program a number of times. You know, she's over in Germany and gets arrested for making a video that she published on YouTube. Yeah. Her brother is still in jail over in Germany, simply for expressing his opinions and, you know, thinking critically about some of these controversial topics and publishing them on the internet. So,
yeah. Was this guy, this Prime Minister, Mahathir Mohamad, did they also question 9/11 as well? Did I hear something about that too? A good few years ago.
I wouldn't be surprised. Don't know off the top of my head. I know I've been following him for a number of years. I have some other blog posts that I've written about some of the statements that he's made. I'm not certain though. I wouldn't be surprised, you know, if he was.
I think he did. I think there was a conference over there in Malaysia, and there was quite a few talkers in it, and he gave it his full backing, you know, and it was all 9/11 related, you know, which I thought was interesting. And I think it's very interesting, John, that we see people in what we call, you know, in Asia and places like that calling these out, and here in Europe we haven't got a politician who's brave enough to say anything like this. It's kind of disheartening, really. But at least it's great to see these guys coming out and saying this. And, you know, by the sound of it, he's probably a Muslim with a name like that, you know. I mean, it's got a big Muslim population in Malaysia. So, it is great to see that, obviously. And it is, I have to say, I really like what he had to say. And that kind of shut that Jewish girl up a little bit too, didn't it? Because, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
What kind of response can you get to that?
Yeah, and in the blog post that I'm talking about, I actually describe him as maybe the most important political figure in the entire world, you know, for saying these sorts of things and not backing down and being unafraid to address this topic. And you know what? I'm actually looking at a blog post that I wrote back in August of 2018, where I was kind of highlighting another, you know, controversy that arose because of some of his criticisms of Jewish power and influence in the world. And back in 2003, he stated at a conference, "Today the Jews rule this world by proxy." And that, of course, had the organized Jewish community in an outrage. He said, here's a good quote from him, quote, "They get others to fight and die for them," referring to the Jews. "They invented socialism, communism, human rights, and democracy so that persecuting them would appear to be wrong, so they may enjoy equal rights with others. With this, they have now gained control of the most powerful countries in the world. And they, this tiny community, have become a world power." And that's exactly right. And he's always defended his right to be, quote unquote, anti-Semitic. He's referred to it as an artificial construct created to silence critics of the Jews. And, you know, it's exactly what this weaponized buzzword means. It's a topic that I've, you know, really focused a lot of attention on. I've written about it pretty extensively, talked about it pretty extensively on you know, podcasts in the past. And I'll continue to, because it really is this totally weaponized buzzword that is used to shut down any sort of honest discussion about the Jews. Mm-hmm. And it's gone on for far too long at this point. I think we'd both agree.
Absolutely, yeah. It's fundamental that we can at least talk about it. And the reason, again, when we do try and bring these topics up, we get shut down. And that, to me, you know, whether you go into what did allegedly happened in the concentration camps or whatever, okay, you don't even have to go there. The fact of the matter is that there's people in prison for speaking out about this. That just tells me a lot. That, you know, when I've explained that to a couple of people here about this, that kind of thing, that gets them thinking a bit, you know. So there's something obviously wrong with the narrative, because you should be able to discuss anything about history. You know, you can discuss anything else and there's no big problem there. But when you come to this sacred cow, that their sacred cow, that this is this Holocaust story, you know, you just shut up and that's it. And it's a crime. Under whose authority do they say it's a crime exactly? You know, where do they get this from?
Yeah, well, they get it from the Jews.
Well, yeah, but I mean, who are the Jews to dictate to us about this, really? Where do they get the authority to shut us down on this? I mean, so what, you know, even if we were wrong about it, okay, about the 6 million and everything, even if we were wrong, at least we should be able to talk about it. Yeah, that just makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, and I mean, you know, his statement, you know, you can't have free speech if you can't be anti-Semitic. I mean, just pointing that out is such a basic, you know, a basic concept. But again, it has to be pointed out by, you know, the Malaysian prime minister. You will never hear an American politician say anything like this. In the blog post, I actually did highlight Tulsi Gabbard, who's running for president. You know, she's actually been out there talking about the right of, you know, protecting everybody's right to freedom of speech and freedom of expression, you know, which is good. But besides that, I don't really see any politicians talking about it, certainly not President Trump, whose own supporters are, you know, getting shut off social media and having their website shut down left and right, simply for, you know, engaging in their constitutionally protected right to free speech. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's sad, you know, we have to rely on other people, other leaders to actually say these things and point these things out.
Yeah, well, Trump will call it fake news, but I mean, you know, let's talk about all the fake news, Donald, you know, all of it. Not just what CNN spouts or whatever, or, you know, he'll talk about, you know, other issues that we'll obviously be discussing, but he'll never go near this one because, you know, he's in Israel's pockets, basically. That's the problem.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah, absolutely.
I think it must have been, for a lot of people who were thinking that Trump could have been the man to change things in America, I think there's a huge, huge disappointment among a lot of Americans now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah, he's been a major, major disappointment. You know, I guess there's been some good things that have come about as a result of his presidency. I think more and more people are much more skeptical of the mainstream mass media, and, you know, they're aware of this idea of fake news and just how truly biased and unobjective the vast majority of the mainstream mass media really is. Uh-huh. I think that he has played a role in sort of facilitating that. And he's, you know, I guess to a certain extent kind of opened up the political discourse a little bit more than it used to be. So I think there have been some good aspects of his presidency and of just him entering politics in general. But overall, I mean, he hasn't been able to implement any of the things that he ran on, certainly. Mm-hmm. He's either been stymied by the courts or by Congress or by his own administration, people involved in his own administration, which is incredibly frustrating and demoralizing, frankly. Mm-hmm. But also, I think he's, you know, kind of backtrack on a lot of things, too. And, you know, he's just been a major disappointment. He's truly like a showman, really. Mm-hmm. And maybe we should have seen that coming. I think he did have a lot of potential and he could have done a lot of things. But, you know, again, it's just been a major disappointment. And politics in general is just such a joke anymore. I mean, I can't even follow it. It's the same, you know, bullshit every single day. It's like a new manufactured scandal. Now it's like this Ukrainian situation, which is just, I mean, it's so trivial and ridiculous. It's like, how does anybody even find interest in this stuff anymore? I can't even find myself, you know, I don't even want to read about it. I don't even care anymore. It's like such a joke.
Yeah, when it comes to politics, I'm not voting anymore, John, and it's just as simple as that, because it's a criminal setup, and even if you do have, new kind of what you call alt-right parties coming up, we're particularly seeing them in Europe, I think there a lot of them have been infiltrated. They seem to be all a bit too friendly with Israel for my liking. And I just have to be very careful about these. And I just say, no, why engage with a criminal cabal? You know, why engage with that? You know, because if you do vote, you do have to accept the result no matter what. So you have engaged with them and you have to accept it. And I don't accept it. That's the way I look at it. What's your take on that, John, about voting yourself? What would you do?
Oh, you know, I don't know. It's really anybody in the Western world that's aware of these issues like we are we're really in a tough spot because there really isn't anybody out there saying anything like this or speaking out on these issues, at least at like an elite political level, certainly. You know, I don't know. I mean, I think at some point if we're ever really going to change anything, it's going to take people running and getting involved in politics and not being afraid to bring up these subjects and challenge challenge the establishment in a major way, and that's not an easy thing to do.
No,
you know,
you're going to get shut down. You're going to get shut down. It's nearly an impossible game. That's why I think it's just at this point, it's pointless. To be quite honest, I think there just needs to be a huge change within the people themselves. So it's we the people who have to make the changes here. And let's be the change that we want to see, and maybe we can bring something about. But this criminal governments that we have running at the moment, they do have to go. That's where I stand. They do have to go at some point because they're not acting in our interests at all. You know?
Oh, exactly. Yeah, and that's very, very obvious. But see, it's going to take some time. I think change isn't going to happen overnight. No. Yeah, and again, you know, going back to Trump. I mean, even him kind of entering politics and kind of opening up the discourse. I mean, it is a positive development. It's going to take some time. Certainly since I've been involved in kind of speaking out on these issues and interviewing people and writing about them. Things have changed. I think it's pretty clear now that there's, way more people aware of these sorts of issues and active in them than at any other time and maybe in history. I mean, that's certainly something that I would argue. And that's a good thing. You know, it's going to take some time and I don't know, we'll see, but politics is really, it's a tough spot to be in because there's really nobody out there talking about these things.
Well, that's why we're here, John. We're getting the ball rolling.
Exactly.
You know, we have to start somewhere, and that's at the beginning, and we have to move on from there. And it is a huge uphill battle we're facing. Let's face it. At least we're doing it. And as I say, it could take a long, long time. Look, we could be long gone before any serious change happens. But at least we got the ball rolling, and that's something, you know.
Yeah, and to me, I've said this before. What's astonishing to me is just like how obvious all of this is now. You know, like the way the Jews, manipulate and control our society. It's like so blatantly obvious on a daily basis. It's it's no secret. Like we have like the ADL. Literally testifying in front of Congress about the threat of, white supremacist violence and all this other nonsense. The government's like openly endorsing and solidifying as like official policy the recommendations from the ADL and from groups like the Southern Poverty Law Center. It's no secret. I mean, you'd have to be just totally blind and ignorant to not recognize what's going on. So to me, that's really kind of, I guess, the frustrating thing. It's like, geez, how much more obvious could this be?
I know.
Before people really, see it and are unafraid to address it openly.
Yeah, well, I think it is happening. I mean, there is a major wake up going on. I can see it myself. Again, it's. I wish it was a bit faster than it is, but it's happening. And I think by the more they push, the more people are going to see it. And there's two other articles you sent me there about what looks like fake hate crimes. And to me, this looks like is that they are desperate to bring in hate speech legislation in America. And they're actually trying to do it here in Ireland too, because we're one of the very few countries in Europe that still has not got hate speech legislation. You can still talk about the Holocaust. You can still talk about things like this. you won't go to prison for it. You may lose your job or something like that, but you won't, you know, you won't be in front of a judge or anything. But they're desperate to bring in. And you want to talk about these ones here, John. I'll just give an example of what happened here this week in Ireland as well, just to show you what they're actually doing here. So I'll let you on. But what was the one about in Virginia? Was it the girl who said her accused classmates of cutting her hair? And then there was there was a former NFL player who staged a racially motivated attack on his business or something. Is that what? That's what I have here.
Yeah. I actually wrote an article for American Free Press this week about, and this is something that I've been covering for the paper for a long time. These fake hate crimes, where you know it turns out these alleged like racist, you know, attacks or whatever turn out to be total hoaxes. And this case in Virginia was particularly egregious. This young 12-year-old girl, this 12-year-old black girl, was telling her parents and, you know, school officials that three white boys at her school, like, attacked her and pinned her down and were saying, you know, calling her mean words and attempted to cut off her dreadlocks. And, you know, as soon as this came out, it was originally reported maybe a week and a half ago or so, 2 weeks ago. I remember I saw the headlines, and as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, wow, watch, this is going to turn out to be fake. And sure enough, you know, the school came out and conceded that, you know, the girl's parents and her grandparents are technically her guardians, but her grandparents released a statement to the school saying that, yes, our granddaughter totally made up this whole thing. It's a total fabrication. None of it was true. And they apologized and said that, you know, they were going to deal with the consequences, and they felt, you know, they felt bad for the young boys that were accused. But, you know, when this originally was reported, it was like making national headlines, of course, and everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people bought into it, despite it, you know, being this very, very dubious and suspect story this girl was telling. But again, it you know, it kind of shows, and it was, you know, on Twitter, I was, you know, seeing people tweet about it and stuff, and it's like this blood libel against white people, and that's a good way of looking at it. You know, this young girl can go up and make these allegations, and then, you know, it turns out to be a total hoax. It just shows you the anti-white hostility in this country and how white people are treated in the country that was founded and built by their ancestors. It's an incredibly revealing story, I think.
Yeah. But you have to ask yourself, why are they putting this out as if it did happen? Again, it's kind of because they want that problem reaction solution thing, isn't it? That, this racism is getting way out of hand. We have to do something about free speech now in America. We have to change the Constitution and all that. Is that what you see is happening here? It's like the mass shootings. You know, we're seeing all these shootings, and we have to wonder whether they're real or fake. And, you know, when you do examine them, you have to really do question how real these shootings are, you know?
I certainly think so. Yeah, I mean, all of them, all the alleged mass shootings, even like some of these alleged like terrorist attacks that have happened recently, I have a hard time buying any of these narratives promoted by the mass media. I mean, it really is very, very suspect in my mind. But yeah, no, these like fake hate crimes, they come out, you know, it seems to be like every few weeks, you know, we'll get another example of this. You mentioned the one about the former NFL player. He had a business down in Georgia, and you know, he basically what he did was he like vandalized and broke into his own business and reported it to his insurance company in order to, you know, to get the insurance money. And you know, the police investigated it, and it turned out he had like obviously done it himself, and you know, that was another one of these fake hate crimes. But we see it all the time. I mean, there was the Jussie Smollett situation earlier this year, and it's incredible the way it's reported, and then it turns out it's all like a total hoax. You know, it's again, it's incredible times we're living in, and you know, you see like how blatantly obvious all of this is. You know, you can see how frustrating it can get, you know, seeing this all the time, and you know, it's still hard for people to kind of wake up to it.
Yeah, it is. And there was an incident here in a very popular tourist town called Killarney, which is in the southwest of Ireland. It's particularly popular. A lot of Americans go there. It's a very nice, beautiful scenery around that area. But there was these posters that were put up on lampposts saying you'll never be Irish, and it showed a picture of a Chinese man, an Indian, you know, a kind of Muslim and a black man and whatever, you know, and it was kind of cartoon type images. And I was, of course, and it was done in an area where a lot of the main hotels are. And in particular, there was one hotel where they used to have these citizenship ceremonies. They've held them there before, where a lot of people come and get their Irish citizenship, and they have absolutely no right whatsoever to be getting citizenship. And when I just looked at these posters, they looked too professional to me. You know what I mean? They looked very well, and they went up in the middle of the night. They were, you know, one day they weren't there, the next day they were there. Loads of them all over the place. And I'm wondering, was this done deliberately? Because all we heard afterwards, all across the mainstream media, was, look, the Irish people are now becoming really racist, and we've got to bring in hate speech legislation. You know, again, that problem reaction solution.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I'm not sure if it was sort of created in order to, you know, justify that sort of response. But certainly anytime something like that happens, you see these, you know, elite political forces seizing on the opportunity to promote that sort of agenda, to promote that sort of, you know, anti-white agenda. And that is again, becoming increasingly more and more obvious.
Yeah. I think also as well they're deliberately putting out ads as well, which are on the TV as well, which are kind of trying to provoke people into at least speaking out about it. Like, again, there was an ad on the TV about, you might have heard of it, there's a German discount store called Lidl, and they said, oh, here's a typical Irish family in the supermarket, right? And it was a white woman and a black man and a mixed race child, okay? That's your typical Irish family, allegedly. And it caused kind of quite a bit of outrage, and saying that's not a fair depiction of, that's not a typical Irish family. And seemingly then these people were rolled out on the news saying, oh, they've been subject to all these attacks on social media and get back to where you came from. Now the woman was Irish, there's no doubt about that, but her partner, who he was a black guy, but he was Brazilian, and they were saying, oh, I'm afraid to live here now and to bring my child up here, and Ireland's turned into such a racist country. And again, we had this call for, we have to do something about hate speech, you know, we really have to do something. But it is actually enshrined in our constitution, like yours, John, and they would have to do have a referendum or something to change it. But I can see that happening, it's certainly very soon. I think there's elections coming up in the next few, I think next May. But I think after that, they're really going to push for this. They're going to push for some kind of change in the referendum to bring in hate speech in this country. And we'll be the last country in Europe for it to happen. So we have a chance now to push back and say, no way, not a chance. And first of all, you know, again, we never invited these people in anyway in the first place, so we've every right to speak about it. A lot of people are upset about what's happening and are want to speak out about it without having been accused of being racist or fascist or Nazis or whatever, you know.
Yeah, you know, isn't it amazing that white people are the only people that are not allowed to, like, take their own side and be concerned about their own people, their own countries, their own nations. That's a very, you know, easy, basic observation to make, but it's so true, and it's so wrong and so evil, you know, like, we're presented as, like, these monsters simply for wanting, you know, what's best for our own countries, you know, it's crazy.
Yeah, it is indeed.
And it doesn't matter where you're at. You could be in America, you could be in Ireland, you could be, you know, in any other, you know, European country or European descended country like America or Canada. Mm-hmm. I've been saying this for a long time. I think a lot of it, this whole paradigm, this whole narrative really goes back to the fake narrative of World War II and the alleged Holocaust, because any time, you know, any white person speaks up in favor of, you know, of other white people, they're, you know, denounced as some sort of racist and white supremacist, and, you know, it's anti-Semitic, and that's just what Hitler did, and that led to the Holocaust. and all this other nonsense.
Yeah, it all kind of kicked off from there, John, I think, didn't it? It all kind of kicked off from there. And now it's even going another layer whereby if you deny that climate change is happening, you're a climate change denier, you know?
It's
where does this stop? And again, that's why we have to just speak out now and keep speaking out and push back against this, because we have to be able to speak. We have to.
Yeah, and I know you had wanted to talk about the climate change agenda and this this entry on the scene of Greta Thunberg, or I'm not sure exactly how you pronounce her last name. Yeah. I actually just watched this earlier this morning. I watched a good video that Red Ice put out on YouTube. Yeah. Top 10 reasons why Greta Thunberg is a fraud, and it was very revealing. I really didn't pay much attention to it. I mean, I saw, the headlines about it. I saw some, video clips of her speaking and whatnot, but I didn't really pay a whole lot of attention to it. This isn't an issue that I've really focused a lot of attention on over the years. I have talked about it. I've interviewed some people about it and written about it for American Free Press once or twice, but it's really, I view it as like this obviously like blatantly communist New World Order agenda, right, to kind of deindustrialize the West. Yeah. And it's a total distortion too of like real authentic environmental issues. I mean, you go over to you can again on Twitter you'll see videos of like some of these African countries like Nigeria and whatnot, and you're looking on the streets and just seeing all the trash and the pollution and just the overcrowdedness, and these are real environmental issues, not these fake ones that activists like this Greta Thunberg will get up and talk about.
Yeah. Indeed. Actually, we have Georgia Peach on the line now as well. And I don't know if George is there.
Greetings, gentlemen. I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Georgia. How are you?
I'm wonderful. And it's beautiful here in Marxist-occupied Santa Cruz, California. And thank you so much for the invitation to be here for what I call my first ménage à trois. However, guys, at the same time, I feel a little bit like a virgin because it's my first time on Skype. I have a new pair of earbuds in my ears, so I'm now officially part of the 21st century. I just wonder what all this stuff is doing to our brains.
Well, that's another question, isn't it? The whole technology, 5G, artificial intelligence. Whether it's climate change, whether it's all this new technology that's coming in, whether it's all this mass immigration, we are being targeted at every level, Georgia.
We certainly are.
Our genocide. I mean, I think they want to kind of depopulate a lot of the world, but the white people are at the top of the queue.
And, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so wonderful, Breiser, to be here today among fellow white Europeans. I want to say hello to everybody. And shalom to all the Jews who are listening. I don't know if you know, but the Jerusalem Post recently said that the Jews are the chosen people. I don't know how you can call yourselves the chosen people when you don't even believe in God. Do you?
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah, it is indeed, yeah.
Georgia.
Yes,
sorry, John.
John,
you go ahead. Yep.
Oh, no, I just wanted to say hello to Georgia, and I definitely want to hear what Georgia has to say about this latest hate crime hoax involving this young black girl out in Virginia. I'm sure you caught that story. We were talking about it just a few minutes ago, but I would love to hear Georgia's take on that situation.
Well, John, the hoax continues to mount in the aftermath of the Smollett fiasco. This sixth grade girl accused those white students of holding her down and cutting her dreadlocks. But she finally, of course, admitted that she had made it all up, and she's apologizing. This was a Christian school, by the way, in Springfield, Virginia. So that begs the question, what has happened to the state of Virginia? But the one similarity among these hate hoaxes is the accusers are never held accountable for their false claims. I mean, does anybody even hear about Jesse Smollett anymore? Do you all?
Nope.
No, exactly. No. Yeah, that's so true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They get away with this we get away with nothing. That's the bottom line here. And it's just hideous what's happened. Just hideous.
Yeah.
Hideous.
You know, and oh my gosh, what's even more outrageous is, you know, these sorts of stories will get hyped and promoted all over the media, you know, certainly when they first happen. And then, of course, it turns out to be a total hoax. But like real, actual violent crime committed against white people happens on a daily basis all over the country. Really, really outrageous stuff. And it's never reported. You will never hear anything about it unless you follow it, you know, yourself. You know, I've been following Colin Flaherty's work for years now, and you know, he goes through and documents this pretty much every single day on his podcast and plays like local news clips and brings up, you know, local stories that you know have to report on it, but you will never see it make, you know, national coverage. Even the most outrageous attacks on white people, where if the races were reversed, it would be, you know, national stories all over the place. Everyone would hear about it. Okay. It's very, very incredible.
What bothers me, guys, is that these people who do this are never held accountable. They never follow up the story and show us some kind of accountability for being allowed to continue to do this against white people, innocent white people, and then admit that they've lied about it, and then it just goes away until the next one comes up. Mm-hmm. It's because we don't have a media that represents us. That's the bottom line, guys. We need media that represents us. We don't have it.
Mm. Well, that's what we're trying to do. I mean, the only way we can do it is online radio or but if we can do it on YouTube or BitChute or whatever. But we it would be great to get. I mean, Georgia, you had a presence on a mainstream radio station, didn't you?
I sure did.
And but your show was very, what you would call, controversial. But it was there, and it was very successful. And then you were taken down because obviously mm-hmm. the complaints started coming in. I'm not surprised to see that happen, Georgia. But I mean, I hadn't heard of you before, but it's only since what happened, I started listening to what actually happened to you. And it kind of angered me a bit. I think this is crazy, you know. Mm-hmm. Here you are expressing your freedom of opinion, what you want, you know, what you think is going on, and people are agreeing with you. There's no problems until the one complaint comes in. All it takes is one, mm-hmm. and that's it. You're shut down.
Well, I don't want to beat a dead horse to death, but my experience and my getting fired was due because KSCO had been Jewed. It is a station that was run and owned by Jews who are very anti-white. I was deplatformed, like so many of us, due to a certain type of ethnic political correctness. That anti-white European American, anti-white ethnicity, and their chosen kind of political correctness. It was a Judah-tah. Now, I got that from Dr. Patrick Slattery, but it fits. A Judah-tah. In my gig on talk radio, I had certain restrictions placed on me. I could never talk about the Holocaust, Zionism. I couldn't talk about Jews at all. So I'm very aware of our free speech being under attack. And bravo, John, to the story of the Prime Minister of Malaysia for having the courage to speak up. That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's very telling that we have to rely on a foreign prime minister to say some of these basic truths.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you certainly won't hear any American politician get up and talk about these things.
Aren't they a bunch of wusses?
Mm.
I tell you.
Yeah, I mean,
we have got a bunch of soy boys in this world running our government. I've never seen anything like it. Nobody has courage except Trump. And at least he does fight back. You know, like him or hate him, at least the guy fights back when he's under attack. So we have to give him some credit for that, don't you think?
He does do some things, I think, which are encouraging. But then he tends to fall back into the pro-Israel line again, you know. Mm-hmm. That's the word that concerns me. And I think he's... Whether he's actually straight up and wants to do the right thing for Americans, you know, that could be true. But he's surrounded by a bunch of these Shabbat Lubavitchers who are calling the shots, and it's Israel first all the time. It's make Israel great. It's not America too much, you know. And just too much, too friendly with Israel. That's the problem. That's what I have an issue with. A lot of the so-called the right-wing parties are springing up in Europe. They all seem to be very friendly with Europe, and that's the thing that Jews do, is they control all sides. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's the far right or the far left or in between, they'll control the narrative all the time. And they're very, very good at doing that.
Well, it makes me wonder if they have something on him, if they're blackmailing him. You know, this whole Epstein thing that turns out to be a Mossad spy ring, where they have things on these people that they can hold over their heads till, you know, and force them to do their bidding. How do we know they don't have something on Trump like that? I don't know. Do you all?
No, I don't.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it seems like, you know, to even get to that, like, elite political level, you sort of have to be in on it. You have to be compromised in one way or the other. Mm-hmm. That seems to be kind of a running theme, you know, when you start really investigating how power works, how politics really works, is these people are deviants themselves, or they're blackmailed, or they're somehow in on it and somehow compromised. And, you know, I don't know exactly what's going on with Trump, but one thing is clear is, you know, he said all these great things when he was running, and then he gets into office and, you know, for whatever reason, he seems to be appointing people that are not even on board with his agenda, which is a point that Ann Coulter has been making from day one. You know, she's been very critical of Trump, and, you know, he'll say these good things about immigration, about, you know, any number of other topics, and then he'll appoint somebody in his administration to sort of formulate that sort of policy, and they're totally contrary, you know, to what he's actually trying to get done. So, excuse me. So I don't know exactly what's going on with it, but it's again, very disappointing.
Yeah. I don't think any of us have figured Trump out yet. We really haven't. He's a hard character to figure out. One thing I do feel we have to give him props for, he did put immigration on the table. He has exposed to everyone that the news media is a fake news media. So that's been a good thing. But this other stuff that he's doing that you're talking about, John, is problematic for all of us. We all understand what you're saying, and it's very confusing. It's very confusing. But that swamp is so deep. Maybe there's just nobody for him to pull in. I don't know. Yeah. That deep state is everywhere, guys.
Yeah. Maybe does he have any military on his side? Because I just thought... you know, when those oil refineries in Saudi Arabia were attacked, and they were all immediately blaming Iran, and I thought, this could be dangerous. But Trump has held back on that, and, you know, the whole Syria thing as well, he's held back on that too. And I'm just wondering what's going on there, you know? Mm-hmm. What's your take?
And I give him a lot of credit for that, Breiser, for both of those. Yeah. What do you think, John?
You know, I'd like to think that there's some people that kind of recognize what's going on behind the scenes that are, you know, in his corner. I think that probably is the case. You know, I think what they've been trying to do ever since he really got into office is to sort of create a situation or manufacture a situation in the Middle East that would force him, you know, to kind of get involved. And, you know, like these alleged attacks that they always blame on Iran and stuff like that, these are examples of that. And so far he's kind of stuck to his guns and not allowed us to get, you know, further involved in the region, which is a good thing. So I don't know. I mean, I think he's kind of like what George was saying, he is kind of tough to figure out. I mean, who knows exactly what's going on behind the scenes? I know, like with immigration, for example, I think he really does, you know, strongly care about this issue and is really trying to get it under control. But you see how any move that he makes is, you know, challenged in the courts, and the courts will shut him down, or it's challenged in Congress and will get involved in stymie his efforts. So, I mean, it's clear to me that he is this sort of rogue political actor that is really being stymied by the entire establishment, the media establishment certainly, but even the political establishment. Yeah. So, you know, he's fighting against pretty much the entire establishment at this point, and that seems to me pretty apparent at this point.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting, too, John. No matter how much he's given the Jews, it's not enough for these people. This impeachment procedure is nothing more than them wanting to destroy Trump, to get rid of him and replace him, just like they want to do with us. They want to replace us because we are the deplorables that got him elected. He's a white guy. Their hatred for him is the same as their hatred for us. And this impeachment nothing burger will just totally destabilize our country. I'm just curious why there isn't anyone demanding an investigation with Biden and his son. I mean, this is just ludicrous what's going on here. But it's just more of the same. They want to get rid of us and him. They'd love to see him rot in prison, in fact.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, George, is this all kind of all theater anyway? Is this deliberate that is from the very beginning, that to put Trump in to divide America?
Kabuki, you know? Theater, you might be right.
And, yeah. I mean, that seems to have worked, mm-hmm. you know, and, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people see Trump is in their corner trying to fight, but he's up against everybody, even people in his own party, a whole lot, and... you know, even trying to build a wall is hard work. They've built a little bit of it. You know, he hasn't delivered on a lot of things that he said he would do. The economy seems to be picking up a little bit in certain areas, but there's still an awful lot of people struggling. You know, we have to wonder, was that all put in there from the beginning and just to divide the country and to create tension everywhere and to create some kind of maybe civil unrest? What's your take on that?
I think that's precisely what we've got, exactly where we are. There is civil unrest. In fact, Breiser, I hope in our second hour together that you will allow me to speak about the movie The Joker, which I saw yesterday on purpose so I could share it with your audience because it's really something else. Mm-hmm. But, I think the division in this country is something we've never seen before, and I don't know what to say about it other than it's some kind of a plot plan. Who put it in motion? Is Trump part of that? How do we know? We can't get the truth. Yeah. We can't get the truth.
Mm-hmm. John, what your take on that?
Yeah, no, it's a good point. One thing that is very clear to me at this point is, you know, we were talking about like some of these alleged mass shootings, and you know, we have a hard time accepting the mainstream narrative of them. But you certainly see in the aftermath this push for this, you know, crackdown on basically on white people, and you know, especially with the recent shooting in El Paso, there was this meme about, you know, white supremacist terrorism and this and that. And, you know, even the Department of Homeland Security recently adopted a new policy that, like, focused particularly on the alleged threat of white supremacists, you know, terrorists and whatnot. And, you know, they go on and on about how, you know, the quote-unquote white supremacists are promoting conspiracy theories about, you know, ethnic white displacement when it's clearly happening right in front of our eyes, right? But yet they continue to deride it as some sort of baseless conspiracy theory where, again, you know, it's kind of going back to my point where this stuff is just so obvious what is going on anymore that it's incredible that more and more people can't see through for, you know, for what's actually going on.
Mm-hmm. And this is why I think that there's another reason why they're bringing in a lot of these migrants into Europe as well, is to create division because, you know, 20, 30 years ago, Europe, well, most of Europe certainly was white. And now we're seeing millions coming in, millions. And a lot of people obviously are very worried about this. And we're seeing a huge crime rates increasing, rapes, murders, you name it. And obviously people are going to fight back, and I think that's what they want, so they can bring in, again, hate speech legislation, a kind of a police state scenario where we're completely shut down, and anybody who speaks out, you're going to the gulag, you know? It's the new world order agenda, you know, order out of chaos. Let's create chaos, and then they can bring in their, yeah, their new world order, basically, which is playing out. And that's why we need to step back a little bit and look at the bigger picture and not get too hung up on whether these events are actually even, some of these events are real, like these shootings, you know, because people are getting too involved in that. And it's making people angry, obviously. And all they need now is a couple of white folks to go out and shoot a lot of black folks, and bang, like, it's, there we go.
Well, have any of you seen the new list by the ADL of what they deem to be hate speech or hate signals? You know, the "it's okay now," of course, we know is a white supremacist hand signal. No more bowl haircuts for young white kids at 5 or 6 years old. And also, even the number 14, they say, is a reference to hate. Because when white people say these 14 words, and I quote, "we must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children," they deem those words as hate speech. Can you imagine?
It's so ridiculous. Well, and it shows you, I mean, we can't even take our own side and defend ourselves without being, you know, derided as some sort of white supremacist racist. It's incredible. It's unacceptable, really. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, we have got to be able to talk about these things and to take our own side and not be afraid, not be intimidated by these weaponized buzzwords.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, and I see there was, this was sent to me actually just today by Dennis Wise. He's talking about a doctor in the UK who was sacked from his job because he refused to use transgender pronouns. And the tribunal ruled that the Bible is incompatible with human dignity. Mm-hmm. See where we're going here now?
I sure
yeah.
do.
Talk about clown world.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the, you know, most widely read book, the oldest book in the world now, is becoming a hate book. Are we going to see the Bible being banned now? This is where we're going, you see. It's laughable, but
it's insanity. But John, you also wanted to talk about little Greta with her braids. You know, these climate activists are using kids to fuel their hysteria. They're literally telling these children that climate change is going to kill them and everyone that they know. They're putting these kids in front of the cameras who are begging for their lives. Can you believe this? What is happening with this young woman?
Yeah, it really is like a form of like psychological terrorism, what they're doing, I think. And, you know, this Greta girl, I mean, she seems to actually really like believe what she's saying. And there's a lot of people that are like that, that really buy into all this nonsense. It's incredible. And, you know, it's sort of a trend that we've seen over the past few years. Think about like the aftermath of the that alleged, again, another alleged shooting down in Florida, where we had all these, you know, child actors, you know, spring up out of the woodwork and, you know, go on these these nationwide, you know, media campaigns to talk about gun violence and we got to take away the Second Amendment. What was the guy's name? David Hogg. I think he was one of the big ones. There's a few others, but you see this trend, you know, they're trying to use children in these, you know, propaganda campaigns against the American public.
And I call this child abuse. I really do. I think this is a terrible form of child abuse to fill these children with all of this fear and this hate mongering they come out with. It's unbelievable. And yet they're talking about giving little Greta the Nobel Peace Prize.
I know, yeah.
Yes, what a joke.
I know.
Maybe Obama will give her his.
Yeah. But you can see how it's all linked, though. The climate change, they're all linked in with the Antifa. You know, Greta was seen wearing an Antifa t-shirt, which is awesome. Friend gave it to her. But then her parents were wearing one as well. So where did friends of her parents give them to them too? I mean,
well, it's, her parents are Antifa supporters. Did you know that she comes from a long line of actors, and her mother was an opera singer, the father's an actor director. She deserved really an Oscar for that performance in front of the UN. This girl has been trained to do what she did up there.
Yeah, Absolutely. And, you know, if she has autism, you know, that's the autistic children are very susceptible to be trained like that. They only see things in black and white, you know, mm-hmm. and they're very easily programmed into a way of thinking. And, yeah, you know, she went out there in front of the UN, you know. Mm-hmm. A year ago, nobody ever heard of her, and now she's giving speeches in the UN. And then they had another one back in the 1992, I think, at the Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro, where a Canadian girl about the same age as Greta got up. Her name was Severin Suzuki. She was the daughter of David Suzuki. Who was
yes.
And she was saying pretty much the same, exactly the same thing that Greta was saying 30 odd years ago. And but back then she was afraid of going out into the sun because of the ozone layer, that she might be burnt to death, you know. So it's the same old nonsense. And
but isn't it interesting that they chose a child with autism to be their spokesman at the UN, so that you would have a little bit of hesitancy maybe to go after a child with autism? Isn't that a coincidence that they chose her? This little prepubescent boy, girl, whatever she is, I'll tell you, for a 17-year-old girl, I've never seen a 17-year-old girl look like she looks. She looks like a prepubescent boy.
Mm. Well, again, I wonder, is she just some kind of actor who's just put out there? You know, who is she? Where did she come from?
I think that's exactly what she is. Yeah. I mean, David Hogg, same thing. These people are playing a scripted role in this, you know, in this propaganda campaign.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, yeah. So, yeah, we're not just over the top of the hour. John, did you say you wanted to move on, or what? How are you fixed?
Yeah, you know what? I am going to have to run. I got some things to do this afternoon. But, I appreciate the invite. It's always nice chatting with you. And, Georgia, mm-hmm. great to speak with you again.
And you too, John. You get out there and start making some babies, darling.
All righty. Yeah. Yes, we'll do.
Yeah, John, just plug your website again and everything just before you go.
Yeah, sure. The website is therealistreport.com. And I'm also a regular reporter for American Free Press, America's last real newspaper. Their website is americanfreepress.net. And thanks a lot for having me on again. And we'll have to do this again.
Okay, John. Thanks a million. You take
bye,
care
John.
Now.
All right, guys. Okay, have a good one.
Okay, bye-bye. Guys are back with you live. Yes, that was John Friend and Georgia Peach there, who came in for the second part of the hour. I'd like to thank John for coming on. His website, of course, is therealistreport.com, so you go check him out and his regular radio shows that he puts out there. And I look forward to having John back on again. So the second hour will be, again, just myself and Georgia. Georgia, as you know, is a former radio host on KSCO, which was a AM radio station out of Santa Cruz in California. And, of course, she was showed off the show there for her slightly politically incorrect views. But glad to see that she's back and raring to go. And hopefully we will hear her on the air soon, live again. On her own, but we're absolutely delighted to have her on this particular show. And so we got the second hour coming up, but before do that, self and Graham have been talking about changing the name of the radio show, because Graham feels that it's me that's out front doing everything, and we should he should maybe take his name off it, and we'll just call it right, or something like the Breiser Show, I think. So we're going to put it out there to the listeners. If you've got any kind of ideas for a catchy name for the show, just let us know. We'd like, you know, just so we can have a think about it. And so there will be a prize, okay? And the prize will be a day out into a synagogue or a mosque of your choice, okay? So that's a great incentive for anybody to come in and to give us some ideas of a name of a show. So just put it out there. It's no big rush yet, but we're moving in that direction. So anything, you know, any ideas that you can give us, please do. Just let us know. Drop it in the chat, or send me a PM or Graham a PM, whatever, and or Zap even. Just put them out, put it out there, and we'll make a decision. And we will let the winners know in due course, and we'll make those arrangements for you. Okay. So without further ado, we'll go back to hour two with myself and Georgia Peach. So enjoy this one, and we'll be back to you at the end of the show. So talk to you then. Okay, it's just myself and Georgia now. Okay, Georgia, this is the first time on our show, so quite a few of our listeners obviously have heard of you, but then just give us a rundown as to what, how you, you know, what, where you started off on all of this, and the, you know, the radio station, all of that, how did that all happen, and just give us kind of a brief introduction.
Well, I was kind of unique in the world of AM talk radio because no one was speaking up about the obvious genociding of our people, which we all know goes all the way back to the Kalergi plan. No one on radio was speaking up for white interests, white rights, because we whites no longer have civil rights. We have no true justice. Charlottesville proved that. We no longer have the right to gather as a people without some kind of violence, with the Antifa kind of interference. All those people walk free, but our people either get arrested and get jailed. So we are under attack. And because of that, I was taken off the air. Now, how did I get away with it, Breiser, for as long as I did? Well, I was born and raised in the South, and in the South, we learn to dance. We do a dance called the shag, and not the kind of shag you may be thinking of, but a really great dance. It's called the shag. You can go online and see people doing it. It's tremendous. But I spent my youth in Myrtle Beach in the Sugar Shack doing the shag, and you could only get on that dance floor if you were really good at it. So I think I learned how to dance. It taught me how to dance around a station owned by a Jew, where, as I told you, there were so many restrictions. I couldn't talk about Jews, the Holocaust, or Zionism. But despite that, Breiser, I was able to get a message out there that, oh my goodness, it started resonating. And the audience grew because people were hungry to hear what I was saying. So it was becoming too effective, so they had to find a way to get rid of me, and they did that after 8 years. So that's kind of the bottom line of how it happened. And I do want to take this minute to say how much I appreciate the Fetch, Dennis Fetcho, for helping this story go, you know, viral, really. I want to thank Stormfront, people like Stormfront, Dr. Duke, Andy Hitchcock, Graham and you, John the Realist Report, Fascination, TDS, White Rabbit Radio, Blackbird 9, The No Agenda Show, Dr. Kevin McDonald, and so many people have been such a source of learning for me. I just want to take this moment to thank all of you for helping me get a real education. You are all my heroes, honestly.
Yeah, that's great. Georgia. I take it you're from Georgia, is that it?
South Carolina.
Oh, South Carolina, okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So you've been living in California then for quite a while then, have you?
Long, long time. Yes, I've been in Capitola. We moved here 30 years ago from San Francisco. We were living in San Francisco when I had my last child, my son. We decided to raise him at the beach. We thought it would be a better childhood for him. And with what's happening in San Francisco now, I think maybe we made the right choice. I mean, it's crazy what's happening in San Francisco as well. Mm-hmm. Look what's happening there. Poop on the streets.
Yeah,
my God,
who would have thought? Yeah.
It's unreal.
Mm. Yeah, I know, like, John lives in San Diego as well, and like California has just turned into this hellhole. I mean, last time I was there was in the 80s, and you know, it was that typical, you know, American dream, you know, surfboards and all of that type of stuff, Beach Boys and all of, you know, it was really a nice place to be, and I'd love to live here, you know, but yes. I just can't believe how it's turned in the last 30, 40 years, what it's turned into. And
And the traffic, Breiser, here in Little Santa Cruz County, our freeways are worse than actually the Bay Area now. It's unbelievable what's happened here.
I was in Santa Cruz, too. I remember going to Santa Cruz.
Really?
It was a nice little town on the beach, you know?
Yeah. And, quiet little sleepy beach town. No more.
No more. Oh my God.
If you go over the hill, you will see miles and miles and miles of what we call stack and pack housing, getting ready for all the H-1Bs that are coming, you know, in for the tech world. It is unreal, these beehive, tall structures, all neighborhoods gone, all, you know, private property, single dwelling homes gone, these god-awful, tall, mile-long things that people are going to have to live in. I don't know how they could possibly think of raising children in those places, but that's what you see here now.
Well, that's Agenda 21 or Agenda 2030.
It is.
To pack everybody into these little shoeboxes, you know. Micro-living, they call it. I've seen quite a bit of that happening here now as well. And I think a lot of them are for our new guests that are coming in, but I think it's generally to get us all out of the countryside and into these horrible... basically camps, gulags, really, is that what you would call them.
But they're expensive, Breiser.
They are, yeah.
These in Santa Cruz, they're building this gigantic thing right now. They're going to go for starting at $1 million. Now, the average person, can't afford that. This has to be people that are being paid a wage to come here, and I think they're coming in through the H-1B thing, and that's who's going to occupy these. And
what's the H-1B? Could you just clarify that? What's the H-1B?
The tech world is bringing in, for instance, many of the people from India to do the software, all of the stuff that's happening. Instead of hiring the Americans, they're bringing these people in to do the work.
Yeah, we're seeing that here because Ireland also is the Silicon Valley of Europe. All the major tech companies have their European headquarters here. Google, Facebook, Microsoft, Intel, you name it. They're all here.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. They're bringing in people from all over the world to work in there. And there's a lady over here. Her name is Gemma O'Doherty. She was taken off YouTube, and she did a protest outside Google. And a few of us went down there, and you could see the people going in and out. I hardly saw any Irish people going in and out of there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's the same thing. And even around Google themselves, around a huge, they call it Google Town because it's a massive, massive complex. And they've actually bought up all these areas which are around the docklands of Dublin where a lot of working class people used to live who worked on the docks. They've all been kind of moved out or sold out. You know, they're bought off to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just knocking down these old houses that were there for, you know, generations. And they're building these awful apartment complexes to house the workers, and it's just turning into one big gulag, you know.
You call it Google Town. Yeah. I call it Jugletown.
Jugletown.
Technology is definitely walking us into this new world order, Breiser. There's no question about it. That's what they're using, and they're doing a pretty good job of it, aren't they?
Sure are. Yeah, indeed. And how that, you know, they're aligning themselves with the climate change, with the green crowd, you know, the Watermelon Party and the Antifa, you know, they're all coming together. So we have this, this is what we're up against. We're up against our governments, the media, big tech, and all the useful idiots who are on board with it, against the ordinary folks who are just trying to get by and make a decent living for themselves, which is getting harder and harder by the day.
Especially in California.
Yeah, we've got a huge homeless problem here, which we never had before. We've got at least 10,000 people, mainly families, on the streets.
Yeah. We have that here, too. Yeah, we have that here.
Yeah,
it's terrible.
Tent cities and things like this. And, you know, to say it's a housing crisis, but why is there a housing crisis when you're bringing all these people? They've got to be housed, so... They're getting preferential treatment. And so there's a lot of anger now. People are beginning to see it. And as long as we control that anger and not let it get out of hand so they can use that against us, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I sure do. Which brings me, Breiser, to the movie The Joker. Yes. Now, I wonder if anyone out there has seen it. It's a newly released movie. I read Andrew Anglin's review of The Joker, which prompted me to go see it yesterday so I could talk about it with all of you. He calls it a love letter to mass shooters. It is a portrayal of an abused, heterosexual, white male, of a single mother, and an absent father. And we would call him the ultimate victim of our society today. Now, the cinematography, the costumes, the acting, I tell you, Joaquin Phoenix is completely incredible. And the film is stunning, really, from beginning to end. The scenes with the saddest clown world memes represent all of our broken souls. Joaquin puts on such a brilliant performance, and I think it's Oscar worthy. His body is so emaciated to fit this role, and it shows what a committed artist he really is. Now, I don't want to give away too much because I think it's a film people need to see, and there's not too many good films around today. It is directed and written by a Jew, a Mr. Todd Phillips. But it seems, Breiser, the character was partly based on the James Holmes mass shooter. Remember that? Guy that dressed up as a Joker and shot up that movie theater?
Yeah.
Actually, as a side note, that shooting occurred on my very first day on AM radio, and it was all we talked about that day. Mm-hmm. But for those of us who understand what our white heterosexual men are going through in our society, we see this movie very differently than what I am reading the other reviews. They're not picking up on this like Andrew did, like I did. And in the opening scene, he's sitting with this black social worker, and he says, "Is it me or is it getting crazier out there? I just hope my death makes more sense than my life." Well, Breiser, who doesn't think that things are getting crazier out there? Oh. Who doesn't think that? He talks about what it's like to be treated like trash, that our society has abandoned him, what it's like to be the other guy. And he says, you know, they believe we're just going to sit back and take it. Well, those violent scenes show, I think, where we're headed and what we're starting to see in our cities now. The crime rate, the violence is rising in our once safe towns and neighborhoods and certainly in these inner cities. I mean, it's an amazing, amazing picture of where we're headed. Mm-hmm. It really is.
Yeah.
I think it's a tremendous movie, and I think everybody should see it, frankly. And I don't promote Hollywood movies, but I think this one is good because we no longer can express our frustrations, Breiser, our anger, our feelings of being, you know, the other people in our own country. And of course, violence is going to come from that because we do feel we are being replaced.
Yeah. Well, Hollywood is noted for putting out movies that are, that portray like predictive programming in them, you know. So they tell us a few years before, and generally then we might look back at that movie. God, they said they mentioned it in that particular movie, you know. And I think this is, again, what Jews and the elite do is they have to tell us what they are doing in a kind of a coded way, but they still they do tell us so that they have clean hands, if you know what I mean. That at least, well, we told you, you know, and... So that would be interesting. I might have to check that one out. Yeah, The Joker. I mean, I think you should check it out.
I think I'm going to see it again because there's a whole lot going on in that movie that is kind of hard to take it all in, but I think it's worthwhile because I think, as I said, it shows where we're headed with this internalized anger that we're all being pushed into because we can't speak up, Breiser. If you do speak up, you will either be fired or you will lose, you know, any kind of show that you have, any kind of platform. They will do anything to destroy you, to shut you down. So that's where we're headed, and I think the movie is showing that beautifully. Yeah. It's really quite a performance. I was shocked that it was that great.
Yeah, as I said, Hollywood is just a it is a cesspit, you know.
It is.
We know who runs it and whatever. But as I said, they like to put these messages out there to us to show us that this is what's coming, and they generally are correct. And that's why I'm thinking: is it so people can watch this and they you know the guys on the screen are saying, "Yeah, my world's falling apart and it's going crazy," and mm-hmm. people watching are going to think, "Yeah, it is going crazy." Mm-hmm. And then is that going to maybe incite them to do something do something violent? Because that's what I think they really want, is white people to rise up and fight back. But they do know that they're going to be outnumbered, that the militaries and whatever will come in with whatever weaponry they have and kill us all, really.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And to bring in a kind of, order out of chaos, that whole thing I was talking about earlier, that they need to bring about a chaotic situation so they can set up their new society.
I think so. I think it just shows the desperation. It shows the mental illness that's going on in our country that we're not dealing with. Hollywood, I tell you what, it is a cesspool. I also went to see the movie Judy. I go to these movies so that I can talk about them, Breiser. I don't go to most Hollywood movies because they're mostly trash. Mm-hmm. But I was shocked that in the depiction of Judy Garland, they did, and it was directed and written by a Jew, too, and he did show how the Jews destroyed our women. They seduced them into coming to Hollywood with all their dreams, and, you know, they were all wanting to find their fame and fortune, and how they abused these young stars to the point of death. There is a Netflix series called Too Young to Die that goes through all the people that Hollywood has destroyed. They seduce them, they give them all this glorious stuff, and then they start their natural nature, which is to destroy. And that is what they do.
Yeah.
That's how they do it.
Mm. But I have to ask the question, Georgia, if they're going to destroy everything, what's left for them after that? This is what I can't get my head around.
Isn't that a great question? Well, I think they think they're going to rule the world, and they're going to have only enough people or robots, who knows what, to help them do that. But they certainly want to get rid of us. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
And turn us into a brown world and a brown country, and this is what they're doing. Mm. And how they're doing this is, you know, as I jokingly said to John, go out there and make some babies. We're not making babies, Breiser. White people are not making babies. But have you heard of this sugar baby thing that's going on, this new phenomenon?
No. Explain that one.
Okay. It's part of this new phenomenon where 1 out of 10 young college girls are becoming functional prostitutes. They're going online to a site to find a sugar daddy to take care of them. Now, you can go online and watch 60 Minutes out of Australia, and you will see there an Asian man who lives in Las Vegas who has this website where you can be matched up with a sugar daddy. It's kind of like Tinder, only this is different because you get monetarily taken care of. So is it any wonder these young women aren't interested in getting married and raising families, and why our birth rates are so low?
Yeah.
And it's a dangerous thing. On this, many women talk about their experiences being dangerous. But the bottom line is, these women, there's such a lack of respect today for women who choose to be wives, to be mothers, which I think is the most important job there is, to raise a whole healthy child to go out into the world. But because of feminism, we are turning young, smart women into prostitutes.
Yeah, indeed.
Now, according to this Sugar Baby website, there are 1,304 young women who are signed up at Georgia State University to be a sugar baby. They're willing to whore themselves out just to make ends meet. And there could be more than one website for sign up. So these women, Brizer, they no longer want to be in monogamous traditional relationships. They want what they call a modern relationship. Yeah, can you believe this?
Oh my God, yeah, but it's—you've probably noticed yourself, Georgia, down through the decades, how feminism has really destroyed femininity. It's nothing about female empowerment or anything. It's about destroying them. And as you said, they don't want to have babies anymore. They don't want to raise families. It was all about getting out there into the workplace, and you know, and now that they are out in the workplace. And a lot of them are doing well. They're complaining about equality, you know, in the workplace, that they're being discriminated against. Mm-hmm. And again, it's part of the whole divide and conquer, like a gender war between the men and the women, you know. We're seeing a lot of that. We're seeing it, I think, now between the generations, you know, between the boomers and millennials, that they're at each other's throats too. And again, it's just pitting people against each other all the time in every way possible. You know,
mm-hmm. And who started feminism, Brizer? Who's responsible for that? And who funded it? Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
same cast of characters, right? No matter where you go, Brizer. You know, many people always ask the question: are all Jews bad people? Are they all bad? Well, I don't know. Do you know? I know this. When there's a destructive something going on, whatever you do to circle around to find out what's behind it, it's always a Jew.
Right, that's true. Whatever you look into, whatever stone you pick up underneath that stone, there just happens to be a Jew behind it, you know.
Right
everywhere I look, you know. And I don't want to be just singling them out just because, you know, it's not about that I have a thing against Jews, but they just happen to be there all the time. So that's why I'm calling them out and saying, why is this happening?
Exactly.
And why aren't, you know, so-called good Jews out there, why aren't they speaking out about it? And we don't see very much of that, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, why aren't they speaking up?
Yeah, because there's, you know, Jews are very kind of pro-family. They're very, as you know, tribal, obviously. They're very kind of ethnocentric. So it's okay for them, but not for us. You see, this is the issue. And I can't say, well, okay, you can do your own thing in your land, but don't be coming over and telling us what to do and then saying that we have to bring in millions of you know, migrants into our countries to make our countries better, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you know what's interesting about Israel? You know, you hear about the gay pride parades in San Francisco. You hear that all the time on the news, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
You and never hear in Tel Aviv, where there is the biggest gay pride parades in the entire world. 250,000 people in that parade show up for that parade. You never hear that in the media, Brizer. You never hear it. It's always here in America where you hear about this. So, yeah, they're behind all of this degradation, this demoralization. We see it in the movies. We see it on the glass toilet tube. We see it in the commercials. I had a listener who still communicates with me who lives in London. He has made his living there for 30 years as an actor, but he's thinking now of coming back to the States because of what's happened in London.
Yeah.
And he said all over town, there are billboards and posters. It's all biracial advertisements everywhere.
Yeah, same here too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As I was talking about with John, the ad on the TV in the supermarket about the typical Irish family, which is a mixed race family. That's not a typical Irish family, is it? You know?
No, it isn't. And it didn't used to be a typical white family in this country.
Yeah.
But something's happened to these women. And not only that, this thing with being a sugar baby, using your vagina to earn money, really makes my hair stand up. I just don't know what's happened to these young women. But something terrible has taken them over. You know, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, well, I think, again, the whole feminist thing was to get women into the workplace. First of all, to get them as extra, you know, that's half the population to get extra tax revenue out of, obviously. That's one big one. Let's get the shekels in. And secondly, because they're obviously working, that they haven't got time to raise children. And then, of course, the cost of living goes up. To bring children into the world now, it's very expensive to put them through school and all the rest of it. So there's no incentives there for white families or for white couples even to have kids. It's very difficult. And again, that's by design. But meanwhile, you know, the guests that come in here, you can have as many babies as you want, and you can get any free stuff you want. So that's where we are. You know?
That's where we are. But meantime, these young white women who go, who choose college, who go get student loans, who choose to work after they graduate, coming into the work world with a massive amount of debt, okay? Hundreds of $100,000 in student loans. Then they hit the point where their biological clock is running out, and maybe some of them decide to want to somehow get into a relationship and start making babies. But what guy in his right mind is going to take on a woman with that kind of debt and a woman who has been in the work world for the majority of the good years of her life? I mean, I just think that's why guys aren't doing it either. What's in it for them? What's in it?
Yeah, I know. And I think they've gotten to the women because it's, again, a deliberate thing. Because I think women are emotional beings, okay?
Yes.
And they've used that to their advantage to pit themselves against men who generally use logic and reason. They're, you know, men are kind of a different group. You know, talk about equality, but we're all totally different, of course, you know.
And, thank God.
Yeah, but it's, again, you know, and you know, the whole abortion thing has been pushed as well now, where it's okay to abort your baby at 9 months, you know. Now, that's not abortion. That's murder. You know,
murder.
There's no gray area there.
How about after a child is aborted and some that do survive abortion and are on a table where they put it aside till they decide whether they're going to kill it or not? How about that one, Breiser?
Yeah.
That's pretty gross. Talk about infanticide. Talk about... My God, what have these women come to? What have they come to making those kinds of decisions? I am just stunned. Stunned by all of this.
Then the other thing is, then, it's going back to the climate change, you know. Well, if you're having babies, you're contributing to climate change. So don't have babies, you know. Or abort your baby, you know. And sadly, a lot of women will do it because they say it's my body, my choice. And,
How about that baby's choice? Who speaks for that child?
Yeah.
Who speaks for that child, Breiser? This is out and out murder. Mm-hmm. We are becoming a, I don't know what kind of society you would call us, but I'll tell you what, maybe our cell date time is up. Because no republic has ever lasted as long as we have, and maybe we've just gone off the end so far that this is not fixable. I really don't know.
Yeah.
But you know, when you talk about climate change, I have a question that I'd like to put out that no one seems to ever ask or talk about. You know, all this talk about us going to electric cars, has anyone done a calculation of whether this will save the planet? Has anyone done a calculation of what a Tesla, if we were all ending up driving a Tesla, will this really save our planet? How about the energy, Breiser, that's required and needed to produce those batteries? They have to be replaced at a very high cost. So where does that electricity come from to supply that energy? Isn't it coal?
Yeah.
And where do those dead batteries go when they need to be replaced?
Into the ground.
They say they don't go to a landfill, so try to find out where they go, because I can't
find... I'll tell you, they go into the ground, Georgia. That's where they
really
go.
Really? Uh-huh. So that's...
And also, again, you know, where did they get the lithium and cobalt which are used for these batteries? Where are they mined? Well, they're mining in the Congo, where they're using 8-9-year-old children as slaves to pull this stuff out of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so the hypocrisy surrounding this is astounding. And this is why I think the climate change issue is a really good one to get to the normies, because it's not that controversial. Okay, you can speak out about this one. Well, you know, we're still getting this climate change denial stuff. That's why they're kind of pushing that now. because a lot of people are waking up to the absurdity of it. But it is one to talk to people and say that the agenda here is not about saving the environment. The agenda here is about control, is about transfer of wealth. Mm-hmm. And that's it. They have no intention of saving the climate or just saving the environment. And I don't know if you've heard about a Swedish scientist. I don't know what's happened to Sweden, Georgia. I'm sure you've looked into what's going on in Sweden. But there was a professor in a university there, and he was a biologist, and he was talking about how an answer to climate change would be to eat human flesh. Have you heard that one?
Yes, I have. Yeah. Yeah, they're going to make us into, I don't know what's coming.
It's cannibalism now is the new
cannibalism.
Cannibalism. Yeah, pedophilia, cannibalism. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all good now. Yeah. Come on, you know, we're living in this brave new world where you can do anything goes, you know. And
anything goes. Yeah, they definitely want our burgers. So we'll start having to eat. You saw that troll, I think, the other day talk about eating babies. I know that was some kind of a troll. I know that woman couldn't have been serious. But that's the kind of insanity that's going out there. But getting back to this car thing, how many charging stations would we need if everybody drives an electric car? Wouldn't you need one maybe every 35 miles for a charging station?
Yeah.
Where do you put them, and who pays for all this?
Yeah.
Who pays for all this, Breiser?
Yeah, it's the new oil. It's the kind of the new energy sector. The green sector is huge business now, and that's why I think the more we talk about it, we can expose their lies on this. And I mean, because it's gotten so big now, if we can expose that and that all comes tumbling down, look what else we can do. You know, it says, well, they lied to you about this. Look, what else have they lied to you about? And I think that's a good point to talk to ordinary people about, because they are going to bring in carbon taxes. They've already introduced them in Ireland. They're very small, but they're there. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about really increasing them. And if people are going to be hit, they're already being hit with austerity because of all the banker bailouts and all the rest of it. If you're going to see half your income taken to save the environment, people, you know, when they talk about equality, they're actually talking about everyone's going to be equally poor. That's the only equality they're talking about, you know.
So, it's true. It's absolutely true. And that brings me to another thing I heard this week. I learned so much from all the great people that I mentioned earlier. And last week, Dr. Duke was talking about foreign aid, how much of our tax dollars we have given to Israel in the last six decades. Do you realize we have given them $233 billion, which means, Breiser, every Jewish family, and there are 570,000 families, have gotten the equivalent of $405,000 from our aid. Now, I ask you, how many Americans could use that money? How many Americans can't buy medical anymore, can't pay their student loans? How many Americans are homeless? And that number doesn't even count the trillions of dollars that have been spent on these Middle East wars. We've spent $5.9 trillion, Breiser. So if you put that number in with this 575,000 Jewish families, that's the equivalent of $10,221,000 for every Jewish family. Mm-hmm. And what did we get? We've lost our men in all of their wars. Our men have either been killed, badly injured, lost their limbs. For what? Yep. What do we gain, Breiser, from any of this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the same thing's going to happen with Germany, but what happened in World War II, the reparations that have been paid to so-called survivors of this Holocaust, right?
Yeah.
They paid out billions to that, to these people as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and they're talking about that these reparations should be paid in perpetuity, so forever.
Yeah.
I know. You know.
Yes. Speaking of reparations, I hate Bill Maher, but I try to listen to YouTubes of what he's saying. So again, it's something that I can talk about and tell, you know, all of our people what our enemies are saying. So I listened to his latest YouTube where he is so mocking, so hate-filled about us whites. His new rule, by the way, is white shame. And he said, there is a self-loathing going on with whites. And he says, we need to stop putting undeserving blacks in prisons while we only put whites in Twitter jail. Now, he goes on to say, white privilege is real, and many whites have a disadvantage because they are born with a terrible personality. Look who's calling the kettle black here.
Yeah.
He goes on to talk about how whites are embarrassed to be white. Well, yeah, we've been brainwashed. Our kids are being brainwashed that way. And that we whites should acknowledge that we've had it easier than blacks. And, of course, he had to bring up slavery and Jim Crow. Now, he wants to tax whites for reparations. Well, how about taxing Jews for being the real player in the transatlantic slave trade bill?
Yeah.
Why don't you pony up, you Jews?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you listened to Dr. Tony Martin ever, Breiser, on YouTube? He's a black professor who teaches.
Oh yes, yes, indeed. Yeah, yeah. He's dead now, isn't he? I think.
Yes,
they I think they came after him, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
Because he spoke about the Jewish involvement in the slave trade. Yeah.
Tried to destroy him, but boy, did he expose the truth. About who really was the biggest player in the transatlantic slave trade. And this is what they do. When you speak the truth, they come after you with a vengeance and try to destroy you. They tried to take his tenure, you know, destroy his teaching career.
Mm-hmm.
I loved when he goes in great detail about the traits of the Jewish people. He talks about how they lie, how they steal, how they do anything, you know, to get what they want, and how destructive they are.
Yeah.
So I think Mr. Maher should listen to that YouTube, and I think Jews need to pay for reparations for slavery instead of taxing what he called the honkies for slavery.
Mm-hmm.
And he said we were white losers and effing worms, that we are white excrement. Mm. Only he used the other word. He's a disgusting man.
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, they never talk about white slavery, about all the white people who were shipped over again to America, particularly Irish were sent over there.
The Irish.
Yeah. And are we calling for reparations? No.
No.
I mean, it was definitely a very, very sad part in our history, but, you know, nobody's clamoring for reparations there.
I love the Irish people because they are so strong. They are not victims, and they were treated far worse than any black slave, where big money was paid for those slaves. You don't kill, beat up, maim slaves when you've got an investment. But the Irish were treated like really badly, Breiser, as I'm sure you know.
Yeah, indeed. But but they managed to build themselves up in America, you know, and be part of American society and play a very positive role in it. And it's, you know, the tables now have been turned, isn't it? You know, and all you hear about again is, of course, what the black people are talking about. Oh, look what happened to us, and you have to pay for everything now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this will be in perpetuity because, again, they tell us that white people are inherently racist. We're inherently homophobic. We're just bad, okay? We just have bad DNA, and that's why we have to go. So no wonder we're up in arms. We're trying to at least talk. And hold on a minute here, you know? Because we can't say that. If you say that about any other race, they'll come down with a ton of bricks, you know?
Yep. Well, it gets back to the same thing. We whites have no rights. It's as simple as that, Breiser.
Yeah.
The question is, what are we going to do about it, Breiser? What are we going to do about it other than continue doing what we do, which is speaking up? Is that enough? Are we going to be able to wake up enough people to start to stand up against this? How is this all going to play out? I've got some real concern for this, even though I do think they've got us in this fear-based consensus trance where we're all terribly fearful about everything. But, you know, think about this. Fear can only exist in our thoughts of the future because it is a product of our imagination. So it's causing us to fear things that don't exist right now and may never exist. But there is a danger, which is a very different word, which is very real. And there is a danger that we are being replaced, that we are losing our rights in our own country. That's very real because we see it happening in the present, right here, right now, not out there in the future. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, Georgia, that we do have rights, our God-given inalienable rights, and we have to reserve those rights everywhere we go.
Well, how's that working, Breiser?
We have to make it clear, you know, that we reserve all rights to our existence and to what we say and what we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to be a little bit clever. I think speaking out and shouting about it is kind of playing into their agenda a bit too much. You know, we have to be a bit clever. We have to box clever here and. Find ways, you know. I think obviously talking about it is we have to, it starts there, because they're even trying to, you know, shut down any discussions about any of this. So we have to keep on talking, and we are making a difference, I think, because more and more people are talking about it. But we have to be careful where this goes, that we don't start going crazy and again playing into their agenda, which they want a kind of, you know, a clash of civilizations and. Or some kind of civil war scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe even talking to black people or even Muslims or whatever, talking to them and saying, you know, they're coming after you too. And even trying to get through to some of these crazy lefties. I mean, a lot of them are white. Yeah? So they're going to, you're just useful idiots. They're going to come after you too.
That's the joke. They think they're part of the crowd, and they're not. They are being used, and once the use is over, they will be like the rest of us. That is the ultimate joke on people who are buying into this, Breiser, including mainly the black people who've always been used by the Jews.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of sensible black people out there that we can talk to and who can see things. You know, someone like, as I said, what Tony Martin, who was a black man, a professor, an intelligent guy, and he talked about it. And let's start maybe reaching out a bit because we might need them.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Because the white society is so divided now, it's very hard to get a kind of a solid group of people together. You know, it isn't long before it gets infiltrated or whatever happens, you know. So we have to reach out to as many allies as we can and then say, okay, what type of world we want. Like, we'd like to live in our own white countries. You can live in your black countries and in your Islamic countries or wherever. And we'll just kind of, you know, live in peace. We can trade with each other. We can visit, you know, all this type of stuff, normal stuff.
But what's the chance of black people going back to their black countries, Breiser? They've got it made here. Why would they go back?
Well, think about it this way. Africa should be the richest continent on the planet.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's got so much natural resources. They can grow anything there with the weather, particularly sub-Saharan Africa. You can grow anything there. You don't even have to do much work because the weather's that good. They can just throw a few seeds into the ground and it grows, you know. And uh-huh. And the thing about a lot of black people, because what's happened in Africa, you've got these dictators that are running a country who are just milking it dry to feed, you know, and any profits, everything goes straight into the Jewish bankers who are running the place, okay?
Uh-huh.
The Chinese are trying to come in there and take over, get resources. The Africans need to take control of their lands back and do something positive and not play the victim all the time.
But they've never been able to do that, Breiser.
No, they've never been able to, but at least if we can... You know, a lot of them have come over to the West, have kind of educated themselves a bit more, okay?
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
They've moved up the ladder a bit, and they can see now, and they think, you know, maybe we can. You know, if we can abolish usury within the financial system and a proper banking system and all that kind of thing...
Mm-hmm.
Africa should be Nigeria, for example. We've got Nigerian immigrants coming into Europe, millions of them. Nigeria should be one of the richest countries in the world. And, it, you know, why are people leaving?
Mm-hmm.
And I think just talking to people about that and saying, you know, you could be, you don't need to come here. You can live in your own country where the weather's better. You can have, you have all, you know, you have your natural resources, your natural wealth there, and everyone can thrive. Why do you need to come here?
You know? But if you don't have a group IQ high enough to make that happen, what do you do? Because like you said, the people that run those countries are terrible people, doing to those people what they're trying to do to us. Yeah. How do they overcome that, Breiser? They're not all that smart. I mean, and I'm not talking about all blacks here. I'm just talking about, you know, let's be honest here. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in the mess they're in.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is, we have to defend our own home, right? Now, our countries are our home. I mean, it's like, would you open your front door and allow 30 people to come in from any different part of the world, different religion, to come in, take over, and eventually throw you out?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So
that you just bring it down to that level, you know. Mm-hmm. So why are we allowing it to happen to our country? So we have to be really strict with regards to immigration, really strict on that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think there might be a case for a small bit of immigration, because, you know, I mean, people will move from country to country. It's always happened down through the centuries. Okay, so that's, you're always going to have that. But I think, you know, just allowing a lot of people who have absolutely can't speak the language, totally different culture, to come in and expect to get free stuff, that's wrong. That has to stop.
Mm-hmm.
But then, sure. You know, if like in America, where you've had black people there for a long time now, a lot of them have gone to university, have got educated, and are doing pretty well for themselves. I'm not saying all of them, but a good few have. And these are the people we can kind of get through to. And
I think we'll have to first send the Jews back to their homeland, Breiser, because they're behind all this. Now, how do we get that?
Well, again, we have to go back to the root of the problem. That's another one, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the root of the problem is what we call the Jewish question. They've just taken over everything in our lands, and they're dictating everything through governments, through education, the whole lot. So that has to stop. And I wouldn't even send them back to Israel, because that's not their land. Palestine is the land, is the Palestinians.
Yeah, that's true.
And the place there in Russia called Birobidzhan, which was set up under Stalin, which was a Jewish enclave, go there.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I agree. But I think until we get them out of here, you're not going to really be able to solve this, because they're behind it all. I mean, the ADL and APAC CEOs came out very clearly talking on CNN saying, yes, we must keep America's borders open forever. I mean, they are behind this.
But you can't do that, Georgia. Right? I mean, Georgia, you can't keep your borders open. It's not a question I ask people who are saying, oh, we have to help these poor refugees. I mean, I'm all for helping people from a war-torn situation, right? To give them a year or two to come and get their lives back together and maybe go back, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't have an issue with that. But to have just open borders forever, mm-hmm. that does not make sense.
It surely doesn't, particularly when Israel has a wall and they don't invite all of that into their little place called Israel. So why us? Why are the Jews in this country talking that way about our country? Let them do what they want somewhere else. But this is our country. How do we take it back, Breiser, from them? They've got our country. They are the gatekeepers of all the important places of power in this country. They print the money. They control the academia. They control the media. They control the people through movies, TVs, etc., etc. Our college campuses have been taken over. Until we get rid of that, we're not going to fix this. Are we?
No, but this is the thing, as I say, the Jews see themselves as God's chosen people. And as you said earlier, Georgia, most of them are atheists, so that's a strange one. Uh-huh. But they see that this is the way forward for them. This is the Tikkun Olam, as they call it, you know, the new society. where everybody's brown and mixed up except for them, you know. Because if everyone's mixed up and there's no racial purity, everyone's lost their culture and traditions, they're so easy to control. And that's why they're doing it. But I don't think that it can happen. I think something will give, because this is an evil agenda, and good will triumph evil in the end. I just don't know when it's going to happen, Georgia, but at least we have to keep on talking about it and doing kind of constructive things in our own way, not putting ourselves in danger so much, but at least doing things that can get other people to understand what's going on. And the more people who speak out against it, Georgia, the better it is. I mean, we had a situation here, a small town in the west of Ireland, where they wanted to, there was a hotel which was closed for a while, and they wanted to use that as a refugee center. And the people of the town said no.
Mm-hmm.
They just said
mm-hmm.
no.
Mm-hmm.
Because they weren't, there was no discussion or talk or any consent at all. And the whole thing fell apart, which is great. I see that's a good positive story there.
Yeah. Well, no American ever had a say or a vote in open borders. We've never been able to have a say in that.
Yeah.
We're living in Luciferian times, Breiser. We all know it. And that's what we're up against. And I think you're right. I do believe, hopefully, in the end, that good will conquer over or win over evil. I don't know. I guess time will tell.
Yeah.
But it's a battle.
It's a battle. And how where you are in Santa Cruz there, I mean, all your former listeners and everything, how are you getting on there? Are people ignoring you, or are people supporting you? What's happening?
Well, they bleach bit me off KSCO as though I never existed. They took all my shows away. So in their eyes, I was never there. Now, that rippling effect that I helped cause and create is still rippling. I did a podcast last weekend with a guy from Santa Cruz who also had a show on KSCO. We did a podcast together, and we were just deluged with listeners. All of my not all, but many of my listeners. Some of them are cucks. But the majority of the people who were woke, who understood my message, who understood it was real, and brought in their own stories, they're still out there, and they are still communicating with me on a daily basis, you know, through email, text, etc. So I'm just trying to decide where I go from here, Breiser, and I haven't made a decision yet. As I said, this technology, I mean, I'm using Skype today for the first time. I've got AirPods in, and I just realized my little mic I bought was too far away from me. I hope I came through okay today.
Oh, yeah, perfectly.
You know, stuff like that. I'm trying to get used to this, plus podcasting has very tough rules on playing YouTubes or clips from other people talking or any kind of funny music like the hoax train, that yes. kind of great stuff. If they don't allow that, see, I made my show somewhat entertaining because Americans are addicted to entertainment, so you had to make it kind of fun. But podcasters are very limited, so I don't know what I'm going to do, Breiser. I'm thinking about a lot of things.
Yeah, well, you know, take your time. I mean, you know, you were doing that for, 8 years, was it, on the radio?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then this happened. So obviously that was a bit of a shock for you, I suppose. And you kind of had to sit back and think of things. So it takes a bit of time to think, okay, what can I do next? Because I know, Georgia, just from where you're passionate about what's going on, and you're going to keep on talking about this. So,
yeah.
I mean, listen, there's a space for you here if you ever want to come on and do a show.
Well, thank
so
that
invite's out there. So if you want to think about it, that's up to you.
Well, I appreciate that, Breiser. I'm very honored to have been asked to be here today because I appreciate what you and Graham are doing. I really do. And by the way, that whole hoax song to me gets my day going. You can tell him that for me.
he's here. He's listening to us.
Okay. Well, I love it. I love it, Graham. God bless you for that, for the courage.
Yeah, he went through a bit of a hard time about that, Georgia, do you know?
Yes, I know all about it. Anybody that does anything like that will be put through a hard time.
Yeah. But he got through it well, and he, you know, and again, these are little things that we can do ourselves if we are, we got cops knocking on our door and stuff. There's ways we can do things without implicating ourselves, you know.
Yes.
Because again, it's you're just putting out a video. You're not calling for violence against anyone. You're just calling out historical facts.
Absolutely. In fact, I'm very much against violence. I'm against these senseless wars. I do not want to see violence between our people on the street. So, no, I don't think that serves us. It may come to that, but I'm not for that. I am for people speaking up, more people understanding what is really happening here and who the real criminal is, and speaking up about it. That's what I've always been for, Breiser.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's why I've done it. I'm doing it. I used to do radio a good few years ago, not so much into this types of topics, though I was more into kind of what was going on in the banking world and the legal system, which again is all corrupt. But then again, as you said, Georgia, I started looking under the rocks and I found Jews.
Exactly.
Behind it all again. Yeah.
Look, there they are.
Yeah, there they are. It took me a while to find it. Yeah, and then I just had to start talking about it, and I started looking into what happened in World War II and the alternative story of that, and moving on from there, and then I took a break from it for a while because it was, you know, a thing with a lot of radio shows or radio stations online. There's a bit of infighting and backbiting going on, and there's a lot of that, and so I took a break. And Graham also went through that too, and. So he took a break, and then we thought, two of us, let's come on and do a show on Mammy's website here, and
yes,
it's just gone from strength to strength, and it's great, and we've had some fantastic guests, you know. And
we certainly have, and I do love that Hoax Train song. I'll be playing it today because I do play it at least once a day. But I guess, Breiser, are we almost out of time?
We're out of time. Yeah, no, just there, now, Georgia. Yeah.
Can I thank you for lending me your ears today, and to all of you wonderful white Europeans, I want to leave you with a message. Be bold, be brave, and forthright. And the bold, the brave, and the forthright will gather around you. I love you all. I'm going to say goodbye for now, and I thank you all for listening, and thank you so much, Breiser, for the invitation.
Thank you, George. An absolute pleasure to have you on, and we'll have you on again sometime down the road, okay?
Thank you very much. Stay safe, everybody. Thanks,
Take
Breiser.
Care, Georgia. Yeah, thank you. All right. Okay, folks, that was a pre-recorded show that we did with Georgia Peach and John Friend. I hope you enjoy that one. I'd like to thank John for actually putting me in touch with Georgia and connecting with us. And that was a great show. And, you know, Georgia's great. You know, she's got real passion, and she's a great Southern belle, and she's out there. And we hope to see to hear her voice again on radio, because we need her. You know, she's great. So I'd like to thank you all for listening to us tonight. And next week, I've got a very special guest. I'd say a good few of you might know who this man is. He goes by the name of Frank Raymond. He lives in Canada, but he's actually from India. And he hasn't been on radio for quite a long time, but he has a great perspective on what we call white genocide from a Indian perspective. So that should be very interesting indeed. So tune in for that one next week. So until then, again, thanks a million for listening, folks. Have a great week, and we'll see you next week. Bye for now.
the Goyim.